It dawns on me, Allison, that we didn't discuss. Listen, I'm not a fan of the Philistines. Okay? I want to be really clear about this. I'm not a fan of the Philistines. But it does take some ingenuity to recognize that to get someone's armor off, it's easier if you take their head off first. You know? Like, way ahead of their time with that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm not trying to say, like, hey, good for them, but.
Maybe they don't get enough credit for their. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there is something to that. You know? They kept their heads.
It took other people's too.
Yeah. I'm telling you, in this time, everyone's walking around with a head. They're just constantly cutting off heads.
I wonder what they do with them.
I think you got to hold it by the hair. You don't want to hold it the other way, unless you're doing a puppet show.
Even then, I still don't know that you want to do that. But I'm saying, like, after, like, is there a certain amount of time that they'd carry it around and then be like, okay, it's time to put you down? Or, like, what makes you say, okay, I'm going to go out for the day, grab my head?
Yeah. Maybe it's once you run out of puns. Like, once the jokes have all kind of been done to death.
And also the fact that people wouldn't think anything of it, watching you walk around with a head.
Yeah. Well, that's a lovely head. Yeah, thank you. It's from the spring line.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Just got it.
Yeah.
It's just weird. And Goliath's head, can you imagine? Like,
that's a big head. And a little boy.
That's just, yeah, Daniel. I mean, not Daniel.
Yeah, David. Whoever he was, whatever.
David.
It's all the Bible. Yeah, so anyway.
Speaking of Daniel, today's day 111.
Yep.
And we're reading Second Daniel. Second Daniel.
We're reading Second Daniel 1 through 3. Daniel 11, 1 through 19.
Fun fact, guess where Daniel is actually originally from and people don't know it?
Like Daniel the prophet, where he's from?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Michigan.
Yeah, I guess he would be.
Michigan.
The Fertile Crescent. Michigan. Oh, boy. All right, 2 Daniel, chapter 1. Daniel learns of Daniel's death.
Okay.
Yeah, all right, we're done. Big shout out to Daniel in Michigan. All right, let's go. A new bit has been born. 2 Samuel. New book of the Bible, chapter 1, David learns of Saul's death. After the death of Saul, David returned from his victory over the Amalekites and spent 2 days in Ziklag. On the third day, a man arrived from Saul's army camp. He had torn his clothes and put dirt on his head to show that he was in mourning. He fell to the ground before David in deep respect. "Where have you come from?" David asked. "I escaped from the Israelite camp," the man replied. "What happened?" David demanded. "Tell me how the battle went." The man replied, "Our entire army fled from the battle. Many of the men are dead, and Saul and his son Jonathan are also dead." "How do you know Saul and Jonathan are dead?" David demanded of the young man. The man answered, "I happened to be on Mount Gilboa, and there was Saul leaning on his spear when the enemy chariots and charioteers closing in on him. When he turned and saw me, he cried out for me to come to him. 'How can I help?' I asked him. He responded, 'Who are you?' 'I'm an Amalekite,' I told him. Then he begged me, 'Come over here and put me out of my misery, for I am in terrible pain and want to die.' 'So I killed him,' the Amalekite told David, 'for I knew he couldn't live. Then I took his crown and his armband, and I have brought them here to you, my lord.' David and his men tore their clothes in sorrow when they heard the news. They mourned and wept and fasted all day for Saul and his son Jonathan, for the Lord's army and nation of Israel, because they had died by the sword that day. Then David said to the young man who brought the news, 'Where are you from?' And he replied, 'I'm a foreigner, an Amalekite who lives in your land.' 'Why were you not afraid to kill the Lord's anointed one?' David asked. Then David said to one of his men, 'Kill him!' So the man thrust his sword into the Amalekite and killed him. 'You have condemned yourself,' David said, 'for you yourself confessed that you killed the Lord's anointed one.'"
It backfired, didn't it? David's song for Saul and Jonathan. Then David composed a funeral song for Saul and Jonathan. And I can't get my page to turn. Okay. And he commanded that it be taught to the people of Judah. It is known as the Song of the Bow, and it is recorded in the book of Jashar. "Your pride and joy, O Israel, lies dead on the hills. Oh, how the mighty heroes have fallen. Don't announce the news in Gath. Don't proclaim it in the streets of Ashkelon, or the daughters of the Philistines will rejoice and the pagans will laugh in triumph. O mountains of Gilboa, Let there be no dew or rain upon you, nor fruitful fields producing offerings of grain. For there the shield of the mighty heroes was defiled. The shield of Saul will no longer be anointed with oil. The bow of Jonathan was powerful, and the sword of Saul did its mighty work. They shed the blood of their enemies and pierced the bodies of mighty heroes. How beloved and gracious were Saul and Jonathan. They were together in life and in death. They were swifter than eagles, stronger than lions. O women of Israel, weep for Saul, for he dressed you in luxurious scarlet clothing and garments decorated with gold. Oh, how the mighty heroes have fallen in battle. Jonathan lies dead on the hills. How I weep for you, my brother Jonathan. Oh, how much I loved you, and your love for me was deep, deeper than the love of women. Oh, how the mighty heroes have fallen. Stripped of their weapons, they lie dead.
David anointed king of Judah, 2 Samuel chapter 2. After this, David asked the Lord, should I move back to one of the towns of Judah? Yes, the Lord replied. Then David asked, which town should I go to? To Hebron, the Lord answered. David's two wives were Ahinoam from Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal from Carmel. So David and his wives and his men and their families all moved to Judah, and they settled in the villages near Hebron. Then the men of Judah came to David and anointed him king over the people of Judah. When David heard the men of Jabesh-Gilead had buried Saul, he sent them this message. May the Lord bless you for being so loyal to your master Saul and giving him a decent burial. May the Lord be loyal to you in return and reward you with his unfailing love. And I, too, will reward you for what you have done. Now that Saul is dead, I ask you to be my strong and loyal subjects like the people of Judah who have anointed me as their new king.
Ish-bosheth proclaimed king of Israel. But Abner, son of Ner, the commander of Saul's army, had already gone to Mahanaim with Saul's son Ish-bosheth. There he proclaimed Ish-bosheth king over Gilead, Jezreel, Ephraim, Benjamin, and the land of the Asherites, and all the rest of Israel. Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he became king, and he ruled from Mahanaim for 2 years. Meanwhile, the people of Judah remained loyal to David. David made Hebron his capital, and he ruled as king of Judah for 7.5 years.
War between Israel and Judah. One day, Abner led Ish-bosheth's troops from Mahanaim to Gibeon. About that time, Joab, son of Zeruiah, led David's troops out and met them at the pool of Gibeon. The two groups sat down there, facing each other from opposite sides of the pool. Then Abner suggested to Joab, let's have a few of our warriors fight hand to hand here in front of us. All right, Joab agreed. So 12 men were chosen to fight from each side, 12 men of Benjamin representing Ish-bosheth, son of Saul, and 12 representing David. Each one grabbed his opponent by the hair and thrust his sword into the other side so that all of them died. So this place at Gibeon has been known ever since as the Field of Swords. A fierce battle followed that day, and Abner and the men of Israel were defeated by the forces of David.
The death of Asahel. Joab, Abishai, and Asahel, the three sons of Zeruiah, were among David's forces that day. Asahel could run like a gazelle, and he began chasing Abner. He pursued him relentlessly, not stopping for anything. When Abner looked back and he saw him coming, he called out, is that you, Asahel? Yes, it is, he replied. Go fight someone else, Abner warned. Take on one of the younger men and strip him of his weapons. But Asahel kept right on chasing Abner. Again, Abner shouted to him, get away from here. I don't want to kill you. How could I ever face your brother Joab again? But Asahel refused to turn back, so Abner thrust the butt of his spear through Asahel's stomach, and the spear came out through his back. He stumbled to the ground and died there, and everyone who came by that spot stopped and stood still while they saw Asahel lying there. When Joab and Abishai found out what happened, they set out after Abner. The sun was just going down, and they arrived at the hill of Ammah near Gia, along the road of to the wilderness of Gibeon. Abner's troops from the tribe of Benjamin regrouped there at the top of the hill to take a stand. Abner shouted down to Joab, must we always be killing each other? Don't you realize that bitterness is the only result? When will you call off your men from chasing their Israelite brothers? Then Joab said, God only knows what would have happened if you hadn't spoken, for we would have chased you all night if necessary. So Joab blew the ram's horn, and his men stopped chasing the troops of Israel. All that night, Abner and his men retreated through the Jordan Valley. They crossed the Jordan River, traveling all through the morning, and didn't stop until they arrived at Mahanaim. Meanwhile, Joab and his men also returned home. When Joab counted his casualties, he discovered that only 19 men were missing, in addition to Asahel. But 360 of Abner's men had been killed, all from the tribe of Benjamin. Joab and his men took Asahel's body to Bethlehem and buried him there in his father's tomb. Then they traveled all night and reached Hebron at daybreak.
2 Samuel chapter 3. That was the beginning of a long war between those who were loyal to Saul and those loyal to David. As time passed, David became stronger and stronger, while Saul's dynasty became weaker and weaker. David's sons born in Hebron. These are the sons who were born to David in Hebron. The oldest was Amnon, whose mother was Ahinoam from Jezreel. The second was Daniel, whose mother was Abigail, the widow of Nabal from Carmel. The third was Absalom, whose mother was Maachah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. The fourth was Adonijah, whose mother was Haggith. The fifth was Sephatiah, whose mother was Abital. The sixth was Ithream, whose mother was Eglah, David's wife. These sons were all born to David in Hebron.
Abner joins forces with David. As the war between the house of Saul and the house of David went on, Abner became a powerful leader among those loyal to Saul. One day, Ishbosheth, Saul's son, accused Abner of sleeping with one of his father's concubines, a woman named Rizpah, daughter of Aiah. Abner was furious. "Am I some Judean dog to be kicked around like this?" he shouted. "After all I have done for your father, Saul, and his family and friends by not handing you over to David, is this my reward, that you find fault with me about this woman? May God strike me and even kill me if I don't do everything I can to help David get what the Lord has promised him. I'm going to take Saul's kingdom and give it to David. I will establish the throne of David over Israel as well as Judah, all the way from Dan in the north to Beersheba in the south." Ishbosheth didn't dare say another word because he was afraid of what Abner might do. Then Abner sent messengers to David saying, "Doesn't the entire land belong to you? Make a solemn pact with me and I will help turn over all of Israel to you." "All right," David replied, "but I will not negotiate with you unless you bring back my wife Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come." David then sent this message to Ishbosheth, Saul's son: "Give me back my wife Michal, for I bought her with the lives of 100 Philistines." So Ishbosheth took Michal away from her husband, Palti, son of Laish. Palti followed along behind her as far as Bahurim, weeping as he went. Then Abner told him, "Go back home." So Palti returned. Meanwhile, Abner had consulted with the elders of Israel. For some time now, he told them, "You have wanted to make David your king. Now is the time. For the Lord has said, 'I have chosen David to save my people Israel from the hands of the Philistines and from all their other enemies.'" Abner also spoke with the men of Benjamin. Then he went to Hebron and to tell David that all the people of Israel and Benjamin had agreed to support him. When Abner and twenty of his men came to Hebron, David entertained them with a great feast. Then Abner said to David, "Let me go and call an assembly of all Israel to support my lord the king. They will make a covenant with you to make you their king, and you will rule over everything your heart desires." So David sent Abner safely on his way.
David sent Abner safely on his way. Next section. Joab murders Abner. But just after David had sent Abner away in safety, Joab and some of David's troops returned from a raid, bringing much plunder with them. When Joab arrived, he was told that Abner had just been there visiting the king and had been sent away in safety. Joab rushed to the king and demanded, "What have you done? What do you mean by letting Abner get away? You know perfectly well that he came to spy on you and find out everything you're doing." Joab then left David and sent messengers to catch up with Abner, asking him to return. They found him at the well of Sirah and brought him back, though David knew nothing about it. When Abner arrived back at Hebron, Joab took him aside at the gateway as if to speak with him privately, but then he stabbed Abner in the stomach and killed him in revenge for killing his brother Asahel. When David heard about it, he declared, "I vow by the Lord that I and my kingdom are forever innocent of this crime against Abner, son of Ner. Joab and his family are the guilty ones. May the family of Joab be cursed in every generation with a man who has open sores or leprosy, or who walks on crutches, or dies by the sword, or begs for food." So Joab and his brother Abishai killed Abner because Abner had killed their brother Asahel at the Battle of Gibeon.
David mourns Abner's death. Then David said to Joab and all those who were with him, "Tear your clothes and put on burlap. Mourn for Abner." And King David himself walked behind the procession to the grave. They buried Abner in Hebron, and the king and all of the people wept at his graveside. Then the king sang this funeral song for Abner: "Should Abner have died as fools die? Your hands were not bound, your feet were not chained. No, you were murdered, the victim of a wicked plot." All the people wept again for Abner. David had refused to eat anything on the day of the funeral, and now everyone begged him to eat. But David had made a vow saying, may God strike me and even kill me if I eat anything before sundown. This pleased the people very much. In fact, everything the king did pleased them. So everyone in Judah and all of Israel understood that David was not responsible for Abner's murder. Then King David said to his officials, don't you realize that a great commander has fallen today in Israel? And even though I am the anointed king, these two sons of Zeruiah, Joab and Abishai, are too strong for me to control. So may the Lord repay these evil men for their evil deeds.
Hmm. Okay, we're going to jump forward here. Mark chapter 11. We're going to go 1 to 19. Jesus' triumphant entry. Mark chapter 11. As Jesus and his disciples approached Jerusalem, they came to the towns of Bethphage and Bethany on the Mount of Olives. Jesus sent two of them on ahead. Go into that village over there, he told them. As soon as you enter it, you will see a young donkey tied there that no one has ever ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks, what are you doing? Just say, the Lord needs it, and we'll return it soon. The two disciples left and found the colt standing in the street, tied outside the front door. As they were untying it, some bystanders demanded, what are you doing untying that colt? They said what Jesus had told them to say, and they were permitted to take it. Then they brought the colt to Jesus and threw their garments over it, and he sat on it. Many in the crowd spread their garments on the road ahead of him, and others spread leafy branches they had cut in the fields. Jesus was in the center of the procession, and all the people around him were shouting, praise God! Blessings on the one who comes in the name of the Lord! Blessings on the coming kingdom and of our ancestor David! Praise God in the highest heaven! So Jesus came to Jerusalem and went into the temple. After looking around carefully at everything, he left because it was late in the afternoon. Then he returned to Bethany with the 12 disciples.
Jesus curses the fig tree. The next morning, as they were leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry. He noticed a fig tree in full leaf a little way off. So he went over to see if he could find any figs. But there were only leaves because it was too early in the season for fruit. Then Jesus said to the tree, may no one ever eat your fruit again. And the disciples heard him say it.
Jesus clears the temple. When they arrived back in Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple and began to drive out the people by people buying and selling animals for sacrifices. He knocked over the tables of the money changers and the chairs of those selling doves and stopped everyone from using the temple as a marketplace. He said to them, the scriptures declare, my temple will be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have turned it into a den of thieves. When the leading priests and teachers of religious law heard what Jesus had done, they began planning how to kill him. But they were afraid of him, because the people were so amazed at his teaching. That evening, Jesus and the disciples left the city. And that is our reading today. We'll have to find out what happened to that tree tomorrow.
I wonder.
Kind of cool, right? Jesus's royal entry, like right alongside David, kind of his ascension piece. Kind of neat. That works out.
That is
good.
Neat.
Yeah, and we read that very neat passage or passages with two questions of mine. How does this help me love God more? How does this help me love others more? So, Allison, how does this help you love?
I'm kind of struggling with which one we'll go with, but we'll say...
Well, just go ahead and give your takeaway, and then we can decide.
Okay, so Joab. I don't know why Joab gets on my nerves, but he just does. He just gets under my skin because...
I think he's great.
You do?
No.
Oh, I was so shocked.
You were pretty upset by that.
The only thing that Joab says that I agree with is when he, you know, spoiler here, when David's son is, Absalom is killed and David's just distraught and Joab's like, you're going to have to get it together. You're upsetting everybody.
Yeah.
Because,
calm
you know.
Down.
Because, you know, everybody had.
But meanwhile, when his brother gets killed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think also Joab was against taking the census.
Yeah, that's true. He was.
I think so.
So there was, so Joab, that's why he gets on my nerves, because there's good, there's still good, and there's bad. But
well,
I think.
Guess what, Allison? I must also get on your nerves.
I just feel like he's extreme. He's so extreme. So.
Joab with an X.
He did not, he doesn't, I don't feel like he respects David the way he should, I guess. Hmm. And because David's in charge.
Yeah, Joab's a little too big for his britches.
And he questions him, and he goes and questions him about who is it? Abner? Yeah. You know, David's the leader, and he knows that David's is a man of God. He knows that David goes to God and asks God about, you know, what do I do next? What are, you know, and he says, okay, so this guy's okay. And he's like, what are you doing? He's terrible. I'll just go take care of it myself. You know, he just respect those in authority.
Sure.
Just respect the one who is in authority. They deserve our respect, especially somebody like David that you know seeks heavenly wisdom. He seeks wisdom from God.
Yeah, God put him there.
Right.
Like literally 15 minutes ago.
God put him there. You watch him seek wisdom from God. Mm-hmm. And then you took it upon yourself to go kill Abner because, I mean, he says, well, you know, he's not legit. He's, you know, not being honest about why he's here, but really it was revenge.
Yeah. That's what it says. So Joab and his brother Abishai killed Abner because Abner had killed their brother Azahel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it, just because you don't like what you're the person that's in authority is telling you to do doesn't mean you get to do.
I think that's good for others, how to love others more. And I think it just simply speaking in modern terms, practice followership.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to be a follower sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that I kind of miss a little bit, and I still have it to a degree, especially with our elders at Harvest Church, but I don't have many aspects of my life where I truly get to practice followership.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that here. Chip's a great leader. But yeah, I think just being a healthy follower sometimes is just such a great way to love people. And that's been one of our takeaways before, because we've seen it with, you know, Korah and his rebellion against Moses. And, you know, like we've seen these problems before, but it just keeps getting worse. So yeah, that's loving others more.
Okay, good.
I love God more. I'm going to go back to this and see.
Back to Daniel.
Yep, I'm going to jump forward to Daniel chapter 11.
Also known as Mark.
Yeah, correct.
It's his legal name.
No, John was.
Uh-huh.
He's like you.
That's right. He goes by his middle name too.
Okay, so I love Jesus clearing the temple.
Mm-hmm.
What a picture of what it means to love God enough that, I mean, it's like, who cares who's watching, right? Like, what's it look like to be holy in a place that is just so desperately unholy? And yeah, I love it. So Jesus shows us, like, usually we'll say, like, well, I love God more, and then, like, because of Jesus, like, but Jesus is showing us how to love God more. He's showing us how he loves the Father.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got this zeal to him and this desire to see, we read yesterday that he came to serve and not be served. Well, that doesn't stop him from desiring to purify the worship that's supposed to be happening, right? Because as they do this, they're stealing worship from God. They're stealing money from each other, but they're robbing God of the worship that he's due, and Jesus is just not having it. And so he showed some zeal. And I'm not telling you have to have a violent outburst, but...
I think a lot of times, zeal. Too, we kind of just brush by this passage, and we don't really think about, like, Jesus, he we're talking angry. Like, this was not a, hey guys, this isn't okay. Like, cleared the temple.
Yeah.
I mean, what must that have looked like? Especially for the disciples. Like, what did it look like? You know,
Dad's mad.
You know, where they're oh gosh. Okay.
Yeah. It's true.
I love it.
Yeah, it's a great scene. It's a great scene, and it just shows us something very clear that social norms, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's fix things, and let's fix things with a little bit of radical and, I don't know, maybe explosive or dynamic action.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good way to say that. So, yeah, that's one way to love God more, I think. I think I do like the triumphal entry here and David's entry into Hebron being in the same day. That's pretty neat.
That is neat.
Pretty cool.
I like that the Amalekite thought that he was going to do something with his story of how he killed Saul, and that backfired on him.
Oh my goodness. Right after David got done slaughtering the Amalekites, and right after David got done running from Saul for like 10 years or whatever, 9 years or something like that, right? Like, listen, I have purposely not been killing this guy, and I have purposely been killing your people. And then the Amalekite's like, I got an idea. I'm going to come up with a great story.
It was me. I did it.
I killed him.
He's like, oh, you did? Yeah. Great. Cool. All right, so kill him now.
Well, yeah, doesn't that happen later too with his son? Mm-hmm. I think so. Mm-hmm. David's got a pattern.
So many spoilers.
All right, better get out of here.
All right. We love you. Bye.